renegade economist is saying yeah.
Economics for activists. Economics is being made. Economics. These are the tools activists need. How can we calculate? What motivates them? Why do people spend money? Understand the basics to economics.
This week with Carl celebrating our second birthday. 2 years on the air with the Renegade Economists. Fly through some highlights from recent shows, summarising hopefully some of the principles that are starting to seep in. Great to be on 3CR. To secure true liberty and equality of opportunity for all by permanently ending all forms of monopoly, especially that of land rents. What on earth does that mean? Well, many activists will know that 80% of the planet is owned by just 20% of the people. And that is what we're concerned about, how to unravel that so that we can all use our own two hands on this bare earth and make a connection with it, look after it, help it grow, help our lives grow, help our communities grow. Unfortunately, there is a massive disjoint that is putting a jagger through our true intentions to look after our fellow human being. It's very interesting to read magazines like Adbusters, to read people like David Bollier, whose piece Viral Spiral goes into behavioral economics and how there's study after study across all living beings that our natural tendency is to look after one another rather than exploit, rape, pilfer, and destroy, like neoliberal, neoclassical economics sets in motion. So my name's Carl Fitzgerald. I'm riding solo this week. Ellis is out lobbying some MPs on climate-related matters. But yes, it has been a whirlwind this last 2 years, and last week's show was a special one, if you ask me. Wendell Fitzgerald from San Francisco, one of the elders of the movement over there, was online, and we went out of our way to extend that podcast last week, so it went for almost an hour, so we could really get stuck into the issues. And I wanted to go over it because what he was talking about was conflict of interest. And we've seen a lot of that this week, particularly up in New South Wales. And the conflict of interest Wendell was alerting us to is how about members of parliament who own significant property portfolios, who are property investors themselves. And as we have alluded to, but haven't ever used the term conflict of interest, politicians decide on major public works that working class taxes fund. So here you are as a renter, paying your income taxes, paying your GST, all the indirect taxes that add up to about 40% of everything we buy is made up of tax. And we say, let's strip that back so there's none of that dead weight and compliance costs going through harming the pricing system. Anyway, with the approval of whichever direction a train line goes, whichever direction a freeway goes, where hospitals are built, where new schools are developed, which one's got the new funding, were they all in marginal seats? Were those marginal seats and the MPs behind them owning pieces of land nearby those new developments? And as you're probably thinking, it makes common sense. If the public pays for something to improve it, then its value will go up. And that's what we're on about. It's not really rocket science. If we contribute something to society through the government and they help make society better, why on earth is this massive leakage occurring that's going out of the public's pockets and into the private pockets of the wealthiest people on this planet? This is the heart and soul of the pyramid system we're stuck within. This is why 10 years of economic growth has done nothing for the working class person. We've gone backwards. Our wages have gone up by milkshakes and salad rolls, whereas the capital gains in property have gone up by thousands of percent. Maybe I'm exaggerating there, but I heard a developer recently say they don't get out of bed for anything less than a 15% return on their investment. Wouldn't that be fun? I would love it. You would love it. We all would, if there was no detrimental side effect on the rest of society. And unfortunately, that's the problem we have. Another episode occurred this week of the poor, poor state of state politics in New South Wales, where the former New South Wales Planning Minister Frank Sartor was caught up in a land bribe and in exchange where he approved a housing development at Catherine Hill Bay in return for, well, some suspect donations. So he basically approved this multi-million dollar project before he had previously negotiated and signed a contract with the developer, Rose Group, which would swap his approval for 300 hectares of conservation land. So who knows, that was probably decided over a long Friday lunch and the deals were done. If you want to keep an eye on where our dwindling democracy is going, please check out websites like lobbyocracy.org. That I keep talking about. There's also up in Sydney, democracyforsale.org. Democracyforsale.org seems to be pretty well resourced. They've got their acts together nicely. And they say the data from the Australian Electoral Commission shows that the New South Wales ALP has received over $14 million in property donations in the last 8 years. But over the same period, of course, these guys have hedged their bets. And the New South Wales Liberals have received close to $9 million in property donations, even though they've been out of government the entire time. So that is a massive issue. It would be very good to see someone compile a statistics on the feedback from those decisions that go with public sentiment and those that go with the lobbyists. And I dare say you all know that probably 90% of all decisions these days are going the way of the lobbyist. So in terms of getting our word heard, in terms of this whole economic system having perfect information, it's meant to be the key to the system. We're meant to be able to make rational decisions because we're all beautifully informed. One of our prime sources of information in the economics world is through TV and by financial commentators. And you see them, they work for CommSec, they work for ANZ, they work for you name it. They're all in there as a little mini advertising plug. And these bankers are giving us all the financial advice in the world, trying to talk up the next bubble, trying to talk through as if this whole economic catastrophe is all over within 1 year. We don't believe it. But why are they doing this? Why are they talking up the market? Even in boom times, you hear the same similar sort of story. And the reason is that bankers, as financial commentators, have a massive conflict of interest. How? The higher the market goes, the more we have to borrow from the banks. The more we have to borrow to take out as a mortgage, the more interest we pay over the lifetime of that loan. The more interest we pay, the greater the profits from the banks. So it's a nice tight closed loop if you're in the banking community. It's a nice closed loop if you're a member for parliament who owns lots of property. Of course, let's sucker in 180,000 young people to take out the first homeowner's grant and buy into the property market at the end of the bubble. Let's do it. Let's get them to bail out us baby boomers, buy in now, and bang, there we go. We can zip off to Aspen. Our investments have been saved. And that's what's going on, ladies and gentlemen. It is carnage. It is frustrating. But at least we can read between the lines. We need more of this. We need to hear more from you. We can key you up on our e-news if you check out earthsharing.org.au. We can send you even a free magazine if you live in Australia for a few editions. Get you keyed up on some of this information. We need more renegade economists. So today, the big news in the economics world you're going to hear about all over the news is about our good old GDP. What has happened? Well, Australia is defying global economic gravity. According to Treasurer Wayne Swan, our GDP has grown in the June quarter by 0.6%. And what does that mean? Well, investors are keying in that there's a 43% chance that interest rates are going to go up in October the 6th, the next Reserve Bank meeting. So that will start the trend. We'll be the first Western economy to rise interest rates, to raise them. And we question this. Just as all these young people are taking out their first home loan, buying at record prices, according to RP data over the last week. Australian property prices are at record levels. And unbelievable, ladies and gentlemen, this is how crazy it is out there. It now, to rent a house in Darwin is now $100 more expensive than in Sydney. I mean, Darwin has been the last speculative magnet in Australia. It's been the last segment where people could get really cheap housing. And of course, the speculators knew this and they played off what people could earn, what people were paying in Adelaide, what people were paying in Alice Springs. And they saw what was going on in Darwin. They said, flip this. This is the next market. We can force them up. We can force these prices up. Look, there's all these new projects up in the north here to do with China. We're going to push up the rent. So the speculative activity is centered in on Darwin. Poor buggers up there. It sounded like the art scene was really starting to kick off, but now the rents are going through the roof. Where are they going to go to next? It really is frustrating to see. So what is going on in the share market? Another big situation developing. And Bloomberg reports that the volatility index is what people are looking at now. And this gauge, which measures the cost of using options as insurance against declines in the S&P 500, reached a record 80.86% in November. The index is still above the average over its 19-year history of 20. So that means five times greater in rates of betting against the market. People are betting there's going to be a crash, and they use these options, the shorting of the market, almost to cover their asses, really, in case there's a crash. And so, of recent, China has been in the news. And one of the issues with China is the quality of their data. We keep talking about the poor quality in Australia, but in China, it's even worse. Because for years, it's been known as the fast way to climb up the Communist Party ladder. And so, at asiannews.it, they're talking about how China's unemployment rates over the last 7 years have hardly varied at all between 3.9 and 4.3%, even in the last year after this downturn.
Renegade economists are saying, yeah.
Well, there we go. That must have been a sign. I should give a plug for Economics for Activists coming up. Economics for Activists starting next Tuesday, ladies and gents. Got the ad happening here at 3CR. Wish I could find it. But we're trying to pull out of the networks Some of you renegades have been contacting us over the last couple of years. Come out of the woodwork and let's study this stuff in detail. Let's look into the eyes of what monetarism is. Let's find out what Keynesianism is. What does opportunity cost mean? How do all these markets relate to each other, and what inspires all these resource wars? That's the sort of thing I'm going to get into over the next three Tuesdays between 6:15 and 8 p.m. at our offices in Hardware Lane. So give us a call tomorrow during business hours on 96702754. That's 96702754. Or check us out on the web, sharing.org.au. So back to China. You know, they've spent over $3 trillion in the stimulus package in the last year. And it's kind of a bit baffling that their unemployment rate hasn't really altered much with the change in the global economic situation, with the change in with all the stimulus money flowing through. And economists have long wondered how Beijing can come up with accurate figures for GDP just 2 weeks after the end of each quarter with a billion odd people, when in the United States it takes at least a month to calculate the same sort of figures. So more and more economists are starting to ask questions on whether this Chinese boom is really made up for all it's meant to be. So recently, the Chinese share market has dropped about 20%. It really is of interest that so much of Australia's export comes from this area. And we hear conflicting reports that there's over a decade's worth of housing supply there that's vacant. And the next thing you know, you hear that there's virtually no property anywhere and it's really difficult to live there. So it's a question is what's going to happen in China. It's a question is what's going to happen with the global share market situation, because typically in October is when there is the big crash. And October 29, 1929 was when the Great Depression, the big stock market crash happened then. And last year we had the next biggest one was on September 22nd, and people had factored in earlier into their calculations. Some news came to light about Lehman Brothers, and the whole system almost came to a standstill. If it wasn't for all those money makers earning overtime, working so, so hard printing money, we could have been in a lot worse trouble. But who knows what sort of inflationary tendencies are going to kick in now that this money is flowing through the system. Australia really is kind of a bit of a renegade itself, having survived so long. And most people are saying, listen, Australia has made it through. Is that true? What do we reckon? We'll discuss that when we come back. So will there be another massive share market correction in the next few days, in the next few weeks? Well, it really is on the cards. To have such a drastic recovery from such a traumatic economic earthquake last week, it really is surprising many people. But a lot of that comes down to where these print presses and the government money has been flowing. And the Wall Street Journal reports that just five big financial stocks are behind the stock market's rally. Fannie Mae, Citigroup, Freddie Mac, Bank of America and AIG account for nearly a third of the market's daily turnover in America. And it seems that everyone is speculating on the banks and moving them higher. And there's conjecture at the Daily Reckoning, one of Australia's best, well, it is, I think, the best financial e-news you can get each and every day. Check them out. Talking it up as if the people, the investors, have realised the government is not going to let these companies fail. So they're just going to keep investing in them and pushing up the price higher and higher. And in a way, this helps the government out because they don't have to provide any more money to those five big institutions. So that's pushing the market up from one side. There's dodgy issues going on in China. And in Australia, we've just had news that the housing market has reported very flat statistics for the month of June. And the Sydney Morning Herald headline was, "Housing Recovery Hopes Dashed." And perhaps that's a good thing for those trying to find somewhere to live, because rents have gone down in some cities, but as I mentioned earlier, in Darwin, they certainly haven't. But there's still a lot of trouble on the horizon, and the Velid Property Group's got to announce a $1 billion loss. Rams Home Loans have warned it could default on its current funding commitments if the group can't renegotiate their debt deadlines that are coming up. Trinity Property Group is looking whether it can take legal action over a secret $1 million success fee paid to Queensland lobbyist Ross Daly. And so, property, payola and politics, the perennial and endemic corruption of our democracy, writes David Peketic, who's doing a great job helping me with a whole pile of random news you can check out on the Earsharing website. Really is phenomenal to see the stories he flips through, and what we're going to slide through here are some of the stories he's hitting us with. And nice to keep in touch with Steve Keen, who's going to be talking alongside Michael Hudson. Professor Michael Hudson's going to be talking in Melbourne October 14, 15, 16. That week is going to be in Canberra the week after, Sydney at the end of that week, and a bit of time up in Brisbane as well. So keep an eye out for Professor Michael Hudson. Start reading up about him, because he's one man's brain who keeps mine just bustling along. And we have to keep up as the computer processes speed up, as the information age overloads, as the problems cascade. We need to read between the lines faster and more accurately to look at the big picture story. And that's what we're on about here at the Renegade Economists. And Steve Keen, his latest blog post is about it's hard being a bear. And he's shooting down the green shoots and, you know, talking about the recession we didn't have to have. But he's still bearish because the economists in the optimist camp are relying upon very bad economic theory. Almost everything economists believe is possibly true at the level of an isolated individual, but almost certainly false at the level of an economy. And that is part of this issue of perfect information and asymmetric tastes. We have different tastes, and intuition pushes a lot of our decision making, but economics doesn't include that according to the old school models. If you want to look at some modern critiques, the latest edition of Adbusters is a good one. It's called Thought Control in Economics. And unfortunately, it doesn't talk about the big issue, the corruption of economics, and how the planet itself was removed from the economic equation back in 1886 when the American Economic Association formed. But hey, you must have heard me talk that story up enough on this station. Hopefully people will come knocking one day wondering what on earth it's all about, because we just ain't going to solve unemployment. We're not going to solve disability funding. You know, the renters, we're going to have another decade of record economic growth and still go backwards. How long are we going to scratch our heads for until we realise the economic system has a fundamental issue? There's a major spanner in the works. We've talked today about how our taxes fund public services, which push land values up, that make it more unaffordable for renters to purchase the property. We're stuck within a pyramid system and few people know about it. So yeah, New Zealand mortgagee, basically their foreclosed homes tripled in the last year. We've been talking about California and their budgetary crisis. It's up to about $40 billion, some people are saying, their crisis. And guess what? Chevron Oil Company made $23.59 billion in profit last year. What did they contribute to the Californian budget? Jack shit. And that's the problem, ladies and gents. We're not getting any share of the Earth's worth. The public needs a share of that. The biggest piece of the Earth's worth is what we all create, and that is the value of living in a community. That is reflected in higher and higher land prices. That's known as economic rent, and the only way we can collect that is through a land rent system, and that would keep a cap on property prices, turn the speculators off this easy money gravy train. So what's Arnie doing about this Californian crisis? Well, it sounds like a bit of a comedy skit, but it's been billed as a great Californian garage sale, and the state is using eBay and Craigslist to sell 6,000 surplus items ranging from cars to coat racks, computers to binoculars and jewelry, and many other states are following suit. Because they're all broke. They've got no way to fund everything because the property lobby have curtailed the best taxation system, the best revenue-raising system through fear and loathing. We're just one small NGO and there's about 12 think tanks trying to shoot us down in Victoria alone, times that by the other five states, and it's carnage out there, ladies and gents, trying to get this story out there. So we're very lucky to be on 3CR. It's been fun being here for the last 2 years. We're hoping it's going to keep rocking. Can you turn up to Economics for Activists? Will be fun. Will be fast-paced. Bit of brain gym. Who knows? Love to have some laughing yoga in there somewhere because we need it to stay sane. All right, my name's Carl Fitzgerald. Check us out, earthsharing.org.au.
It's not enough to have a dream unless I'm willing to pursue it. It's not enough to know what's right unless I'm strong enough to do it. It's not enough to join the crowd, to be acknowledged and accepted. I must be true to my ideals, even if I'm excluded and rejected. It's not enough to learn the truth unless I also learn to live it. It's not enough to reach for love unless I care enough to give it. To dream anything that you want to dream. That's the beauty of the human mind. To do anything that you want to do. That is the strength of the human will. To trust yourself to test your limits. That is the courage to succeed.
Say a very, very happy birthday to Mr. Henry George. He would have been 170 today. He's the man who talked about putting idle men and women onto idle land to save the sprawl, save the environment, and simplify life. Check him out. Keep it rolling.
And the power of your true vision to create and contribute. It is a fight between those who will tell you what you cannot do and the part of you that knows and has always known that we are more than our environment and that a dream, backed by an unrelenting will to attain it, is truly a reality with an imminent arrival.
Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online.